Okay, we saw the problem of noise amplification with the first order difference or derivative filter. Now, noise amplification may be controlled or reduced by putting a low pass filter in series with the derivative operation, which is a high pass filter. So one possibility to do that is to take the average of two successive output values. We said yn, the derivative is equal to xn minus 1, and yn minus 1, the output value one sample before the current sample is then xn minus 1 minus xn minus 2. So if you take the average of two successive output values of the first difference operator, you get 1 over 2t. The t factor is from this. And you average this, or you simplify this, you get the result. There is this bracket missing. But 1 over 2t times xn minus 2. Now, this looks like a derivative operator, or a difference between the current sample and the sample two samples ago. But it is essentially the average of two values of the derivative operator. So this averaging can reduce the noise to some extent because you are putting a smoothing filter in series with a derivative. The frequency response of this filter is shown here. You get 1 minus z to the minus 2, which is the product of the transfer function of the derivative filter, 1 minus z to the minus 1, and then the transfer function of the two-sample averaging filter, which is 1 over 2, the current sample and the previous sample, 1 plus z to the minus 1. The two are in series, so it doesn't matter which one you put first or second. The net transfer function is the product of the transfer functions of the two filters. The derivative filter has a 0 at z equal to 1, which is at DC. The other filter, 1 plus z to the minus 1, has a 0 at z equal to minus 1, we don't have the diagram, which is at half the sampling frequency. So you have two zeros, one at the beginning and the other at the end of the range of frequencies from 0 to half the sampling frequency. So it is a band pass filter. This is a high pass filter, this is a low pass filter. Now combined, they give you a band pass filter with zeros at z equal to 1 and z equal to minus 1. So the magnitude response increases because of the derivative filter and then decreases because of the smoothing filter. So the gain at high frequencies has now been reduced, but the gain still increases up to 1/4 of the sampling frequency. Up to 250 hertz, the gain is increasing. The phase response is linear. So this results in a slight reduction of the noise. This is the filter, this is the result I showed first using the first order difference or derivative operator. And if you include smoothing, the result is this, where the noise here has been reduced a little in amplitude, but essentially the QRS complexes have been removed and replaced by sharp transients, and the P and the T waves have been completely removed anyway, because the response of this filter in the range of the frequencies contained in the ECG is very small for the low frequency range from 0 to 5, 10 hertz relating to the P and T waves. But the P and T waves are completely removed. So this is good to remove low frequency content, but for the ECG, it removes the P and T waves and also distorts the QRS complex so much that the result is no longer like an ECG, either this or the other one with the three-point filter, the three-point difference filter. With the smoothing included, it is still not useful. So the reason I'm showing these is intuitively, we may come up with an idea that says the derivative filter with a low gain at low frequency may be useful, but in this case it fails. It removes the low frequency artifact, but also distorts the signal so much that the output is useless as far as interpretation of the ECG waveform is concerned. So we need to recognize that some techniques that we may come up with initially may appear to be attractive, but may lead to useless results. Then you could modify the technique appropriately to get the desired result. And we will see some examples of that later. So now the question is, how can we improve the performance of the basic first-order difference operator as a filter to remove low-frequency noise or baseline wander without distorting the QRS complex? What can we do to the transfer function of the basic difference operator so that the result can give us removal of baseline artifact without distorting the ECG so much? So the main drawback of the first order difference and the three-point central difference operator, the two operators we saw just now, is that the magnitude responses remain low for a significant range of frequencies. We need the gain of the filter to be as close to unity after about 0.5 hertz. And that is not what we have. Here, the gain is very low in the low frequency range where there is useful information in the ECG signal. You want the gain to be zero at DC, but you want the gain to suddenly increase to the maximum gain, and you want a filter that goes from 0 to 1 and then stays through at least until 50, 60 hertz, and then it can come down. So the desirable characteristics will be 0 here, go up within about less than 1 hertz, hit the maximum, stay at the maximum until about 50, 60 hertz, and then come down. That is what we want. Note that in this case, the gain is not normalized to be equal to 1 at the maximum. If you want, you will have to divide this by 2. So how do we do that? To increase the gain in the pole zero diagram, we can put a pole. We know that there is a zero at DC. And you want the gain to increase suddenly, so you need to put a pole. So where do you put a pole? This is where the graphical method of computing or estimating the frequency response is useful. We need a zero at z equal to 1 to remove low frequency components. And we want the gain to be zero, and then you want it to increase suddenly at less than, I'll change it to frequency F, at less than 1 hertz. You want it to hit the maximum of, let's say it is normalized to 1. So how do you do that? Zero will give you zero gain here. To have large gain, you must put a pole. So you put a pole very close to the DC at 0.5 hertz or 0.2 hertz or somewhere here where the angle is very small, you put a pole. You cannot put a pole on the unit circle because then it will be unstable. So you put a pole that is a little inside the unit circle, as close to the unit circle as you wish. Then of course, because it is a complex pole, you must have the conjugate. So you put these two poles. And let's say this is at something like 0.2 hertz or less than that, depending upon where you want to put the pole. If you don't want to put two poles, you could put one pole on the real axis at a point that is less than Z equal to 1. That's also possible. So what is the effect of putting these poles? The gain will increase. The gain at some frequency, let's say from here, will be the ratio of these distances from the 0 to the pole. Suppose I only have one pole. Suppose I just put only one pole at Z equal to 0.9. Then, at this point, the distance to the 0 is 0, so that's numerator, divided by something, the distance to the pole, that is still 0. But at some other point, at some other frequency that is greater than 0, you have a distance to the 0 and a distance to the pole, and they're almost equal. So the gain is 1. And later on, the distances are almost equal. As you go farther and farther away, the distances to the pole and 0 are almost the same, so the gain will remain equal to 1. So you could put, for example, a pole at Z equal to 0.995. And then you get a response, a transfer function that looks like this. This is empirical, or just using logic based upon the graphical representation of the transfer function using poles and zeros. There is no theory behind it except understanding what the pole does and what a zero does. So using this, when the transfer function is given here, the input-output relationship in the form of a difference equation is given here. Yn is xn minus 1 plus, there is feedback because of the pole, 0.995 yn minus 1 or 0.99 or 95, whatever the value you want to put there. Now, this is an infinite impulse response filter because of the feedback. Regardless, there is a transfer function that will give you a magnitude response. Let me see here. That increases from 0 to 1 within about 1 hertz. In between, the distances will not be equal. At very low frequencies, the distance to the zero is very small and the distance to the pole is also small, but that ratio will not be equal to 1. After a certain angular position on the unit circle, the two distances will be equal and the gain remains equal to 1. So this is a high-pass filter with a sharp increase in the gain after DC. You are still losing some frequencies here, which are critical for the ECG. Because I mentioned earlier, remember, that the ECG has components desirable down to 0.05 hertz. So this doesn't do the job exactly, but it does better than the other just derivative-based filter. But this is the transfer function we said we would try. And that's the realization of the filter. There are some important points about the signal flow diagram that I would like you to note here. Here we have the derivative part of the filter. We have 1 over t. You're taking the signal xn. With a delay, you get xn minus 1, subtract it. So this is 1 over t xn minus 1. So this is the derivative part. Then we have the feedback part. Yn, a delay, that is Yn minus 1, multiply with 995, add, and that's the output. So this is the direct realization of the transfer function. Now, it does not matter which order we put the filter. You can take this and put it here, or take this and put here. If you swap the positions, you will see that the z to the minus 1 and z to the minus 1 will be the same in the middle, so you can remove one of those paths. There will be two paths that are z to the minus 1 and z to the minus 1 side by side with nothing in between. Keep the 1 over t outside, take this, and put it here. when you have multiple linear systems, linear shift invariant systems in series, the sequence does not matter. You can interchange them, because if this is H1Z, this is H2Z, the net transfer function is Hz equal to H1Z times H2Z, which of course is equal to H2Z times H1Z. So replacing or shifting the sequence here doesn't matter. And in doing the shifting, we will realize that two paths of z to the minus 1 will come side by side, and they can be merged. So you can remove one delay and realize a more efficient representation of the same filter using only one delay instead of two delays. The rest of the filter is the same. So I suggest that you do this as an exercise and see as to what is happening here, and make sure that the output here is equal to the output there as a little homework exercise. Call this something. This is yn, so call this bn or something, wn, and get the expression for wn in terms of xn, and then get the output yn in terms of wn and substitute and get in terms of xn and make sure that the two results agree. So please do that as a homework, because I may give you a question of that nature in the exam. This I already mentioned, so I'll skip this. So this is the response of the filter. The phase is nonlinear, so when you have feedback, then you encounter nonlinearities in the phase. And this is the result, where now the ECG is okay, the QRS complex can be seen, the P wave and T wave are there, the noise is not amplified so much, the baseline drift has been removed, but there is a small distortion in the signal that may not be readily seen if you don't know what you're looking for. But I can point out to something here, that there is a distortion, because what you're doing is taking the derivative. When you're taking the derivative of a smooth wave, you will end up with oscillations. That is, let's say the P wave or the T wave, when you take the derivative, you will end up with something like that. If you take a smooth derivative, you may get something that has a small undershoot at the end. So what was once a P wave that was completely positive will now have a positive part and a negative part. So the QRS complex may be enhanced, but the T wave may show something. The P wave may go like that, and the T wave may go like this. And the ST segment may also be affected. So in the output, you will see some distortion. The advantage of this mode is I can zoom it like crazy, and I'll show you what is happening here. The ST segment is not flat anymore. From the QRS, it is going up, and after the T wave, there is something negative, and then it goes like this, which you cannot see if you just look at the entire signal. But if you were to pay close attention, you will see that there is a distortion. It's obvious here too. So the ECG waveform has been distorted a little bit, and if you are interested in analyzing the morphology of the ECG signal to see if the ST segment is flat or not, or if the PQ segment is flat or not, this will mislead you. So even though we put a pole and said the gain increases rapidly after DC, there is a distortion. The baseline artifact has been removed, but there is distortion. Yeah. You mean filter the opposite way? You can remove nonlinearities in phase by using reversed filtering. You can correct for phase response, but you cannot correct for the magnitude response, which is low in the range from 0 to 0.5 hertz. This is caused by the gain being low. It's after all a derivative operator that is being fixed. I haven't tried the filt-filt. I have done it for something else, but I haven't done. In MATLAB, there is a function filt-filt, which will apply the filter in the forward direction and in the reverse direction. But of course, that you cannot apply in real time, online filtering. You can only do it offline, and it is not causal anymore. I haven't tried that. You may try that and see if it removes this artifact, but I doubt it, because this is caused by the derivative operation. Okay? So you may remove an artifact, but you may cause some other artifact. That is always the general possibility and rule in applying artifact reduction techniques or filtering techniques, that you gain something at the loss of something else. It's very difficult to just remove the artifacts and preserve the signal completely. So these are rather ad hoc filters that are based upon very basic principles and properties of the Fourier transform. We didn't have any particular design. We simply said, well, we take the average, you can reduce the noise. So we did some moving average filtering. We take the derivative, we can remove low frequency components. So we tried it. They work to a certain extent, but there is no underlying theory that says you will get a certain response. If you want a specific response with an underlying theory, then you would design a certain filter, such as a Butterworth filter or a Chebyshev filter or an elliptic filter. And we will look at the Butterworth filter in a little while. It is possible to design filters in the frequency domain where you specify the high pass, low pass, band reject, or notch characteristics. And you may implement them in software after obtaining the Fourier transform of the input signal, or you could take the characteristics that you wish to have in the frequency domain, apply an inverse transform, get the impulse response, and apply that as a convolution filter in the time domain. The most commonly used designs, as I mentioned just now, are the Butterworth, Chebyshev, elliptic, and Bessel filters. The advantage is that these filters are very well established in the analog filter domain. They have been known for several decades, and books exist that give you the tables of coefficients for various parameters, and they give the transfer function HS in the analog Laplace domain. You can apply transformations such as the bilinear transformation and obtain an equivalent digital filter HZ, and then implement that as a digital filter. There is also the possibility that you first design a low-pass filter with the desired characteristics. The characteristics are specified in terms of the pass band, the transition band, and the stop band characteristics. And then you could do this on a normalized frequency axis. And after that, you transform that prototype low-pass filter to the desired low-pass or high-pass or band-reject filter. And there are these transformations available again in standard books on analog filter design and also in the digital domain. So you can convert the prototypical low-pass filter that is normalized into a different filter. And then you end up with the desired filter. You can also do this on a sample-by-sample basis. The frequency domain filter may also be specified directly in terms of the values of the desired frequency response at certain samples in the frequency space. And then take the inverse transform, come back to the time domain, and you get the coefficients of the filter. You may end up with an infinitely long series. You truncate it when the values are negligible, and then you get a finite impulse response filter. Well, let's consider the Butterworth design now, and then we will look at other filters that you can specify in the frequency domain. Before doing this, I would like to mention a few specifications that one would normally be interested in providing in stating the requirements of a filter. And as I said, typically you would specify the characteristics using a low-pass filter. If what you want is a high-pass filter, you could transform that low-pass filter into a high-pass filter. So here is the frequency axis, and this is the frequency response in magnitude. We will not worry about the phase now. So what you will say is you want the response in a certain pass band to be within some range. If the maximum is normalized to 1, you will say that in this range, you want the filter response to be something. I'm just drawing something arbitrarily here. And then you say there is a stop band, and you want the gain to be within something. And then there is a transition band, and you want the gain to be something there. By specifying the frequency limits of the stop band and the pass band and the effectively the transition band, you can arrive at a certain design. What you need to specify is what is the range? You want the gain to be 1 here, but what is the minimum gain you want in the pass band? Can you allow the gain to drop to 0.9? Do you want it to be more than 0.8, or do you want it 0.99? So you specify your tolerance in this pass band. Similarly, in the stop band, what is the gain that you want, or attenuation? Do you want it to be 0.1, or does it have to be 0.01? What is the maximum gain that you will allow in the stop band? And how fast do you want the filter to go from the pass band to the stop band as a low-pass filter? What is this rate of transition? And in this band, you would say, I don't care what happens. So you're assuming that the range of interest in the signal is somewhere there. Beyond that, you don't care. So this is the general idea. Now, in a Butterworth filter, you say that you want the gain to decay monotonically in the pass band, in the transition band, and in the stop band. The requirement is that the gain decays monotonically. There is no variation as I drew there. So that will give you, this is flat, this is not increasing. It's flat and then it goes down. A requirement of this nature is satisfied by the Butterworth design. And then there is the Chebyshev design where you allow variation in one of the bands, some oscillatory behavior in either the pass band or in the stop band. It's supposed to be straight, but I can't reach there. So that leads to what is called the Chebyshev filter. And then there is the elliptic filter where you allow variations in both the pass band and the stop band. These are three designs that are classical filter designs that are well known in the analog domain, specified in terms of the Laplace domain transfer function H of S. And then you can convert them to H of Z by using the bilinear transformation. So if you want a smooth function, you would specify a Butterworth design or choose a Butterworth design. The rate of decay of the gain here depends upon the order of the filter. The higher the order of the filter, the faster the reduction in gain or transition from the pass band to the stop band. That means increased hardware requirement and increased delay in the output. For the same order, by sacrificing monotonicity, moving from the Butterworth to the Chebyshev or the elliptic design, you can get a faster transition for the same order of the filter, but the gain will not be uniform in the pass band or the stop band or both. So that's a quick overview of the three types of filters that are commonly used. So now what we want to do here, if you were to specify in the problem, design a frequency domain filter to remove high frequency noise with minimal loss of signal components in the specified pass band, then the best solution would be this Butterworth filter. We're not specifying that it should be flat, but if it is a requirement that the pass band have flat response up to a certain frequency, then the Butterworth is the best design. If you simply say, I will allow a certain loss within so many dB in the pass band or stop band, you could possibly use the other two designs, Chebyshev or elliptic filters. So the Butterworth gives you the best frequency response, and by increasing the gain, you can get faster and faster transition band response. We will see an example of the Butterworth design now. A Butterworth low-pass filter of order n has the first 2n-1 derivatives of the squared magnitude response, h square s, in the Laplace domain, equal to 0 at omega equal to 0. And here, capital omega is used to indicate frequency in the analog domain before conversion to digital. So omega is the analog radian frequency. The Butterworth response is monotonic, as I mentioned, in the pass band as well as in the stop band, and that may be a desirable or required characteristic. The basic Butterworth low-pass filter function is specified in this manner: HA j omega square, it is the squared magnitude response, is given by 1 divided by 1 plus j omega divided by j omega c, where omega c is the cutoff, which is the minus 3 dB cutoff or half power point, to the power of 2n, where n is the order of the filter. So this is the classical Butterworth design that is based upon the requirement that at DC, the response should be maximally flat by having 2n-1 derivatives of this function equal to 0. And you can see that when you take the derivative, there will be an omega component there, so that will be 0. What else? A Butterworth filter is specified by only two parameters: omega c, the 3 dB cutoff point, and n, the order of the filter. So those are the only two parameters required. This is a low-pass filter. As the order n increases, the filter response becomes more flat in the pass band, and the transition to the stop band becomes faster or sharper. Regardless of the order, HA at omega c is equal to half HA square, so it is half power. So as you increase, the minus 3 dB point will be somewhere here. As you increase the order, it will become flatter and then sharper, but all of them will pass through the minus 3 dB point at the same cutoff frequency. So as the order becomes higher and higher, the transition becomes faster and faster. I'll show some examples in plots later. So let's consider the Laplace variable S. And now you have HAS and HA minus S equal to 1 over 1 plus S divided by J omega C. S is equal to sigma plus J omega, where sigma is the attenuation factor, but we will ignore that and deal with only the vertical frequency axis. To remind you about the Laplace domain, there'll be some zeros and some poles. There could be zeros here, but no poles on the right side. So in the Laplace domain or the S domain, you have sigma and J omega, and S is equal to sigma plus J. We use capital omega for the analog frequency. This is the frequency axis. There could be zeros. Oh, that's not there. It should be at the complex conjugate there. There could be zeros on both the right side, right-hand side and left-hand side of the S-plane, but poles can exist only on the left-hand side for stable filters. You must have seen this in some course earlier, I presume. Right? Okay. So if you consider HAS multiplied with HA minus S, then you get the squared function as 1 over 1 plus S divided by J omega C to n, to the power of 2n. That's the transfer function as a function of S now. Previously, we wrote it as a function of omega. The poles of the squared transfer function are located with equal spacing around a circle of radius omega C in the S-plane. So this function has poles that are equally spaced around a circle in the S-plane, distributed symmetrically on either side of the imaginary axis. So I'll remove this. This is simply a general filter. In the case of the Butterworth filter, there is a circle here. Note that this is the S-plane, and there could be poles on both sides. Because it is a squared transfer function. If you just take HAS, you only have this part, which will be the stable filter. This is for HAS square. Okay? Now, because of this form, there will be 2n poles, out of which n poles will be for the filter, which is stable. So there will be no pole on the imaginary axis. There will be poles on the real axis for odd n, which means what I drew is wrong. If it is 3, what do I have here? 6 and 12. Okay, this is correct. There are 6. This is even n. If n is odd, there will be a pole here and there. They are equally spaced, so that is correct. The angular spacing between the poles is pi over n. If HAS times HA minus S has a pole at S equal to SP, there will be a pole at S equal to minus SP also. So whatever you see here is reflected on the other side. And of course, they must be in conjugate pairs, so it's also reflected this way. For the filter coefficients to be real, the complex poles must appear in conjugate pairs. So there is symmetry around both axes here. To obtain a stable and causal filter, we form the transfer function using only the N poles on the left-hand side of the S-plane. So you select these to get the Butterworth filter. The positions of these poles are given by this formula. You can get them, You can get them graphically if you want, like that, or you can get it in this manner using the exponential function, g omega, and it gives the positions around the circle, and you only choose the left-hand side. But the radius of the circle is omega c. So you need to know what the cutoff is that you want in the analog domain. So then you know the positions of the poles. You need to know the cutoff frequency and the order. Omega C and N will determine the frequency response within a gain factor, and the gain factor could be normalized so that the gain at DC is equal to 1. So once the pole positions have been obtained in the S-plane using this design, you derive the transfer function. It is HAS is the gain, whatever gain you want, divided by S minus each pole. S minus P1 is the pole at P1, times S minus P2, S minus P3, so on, S minus Pn. For each one of them, you have S minus this times S minus this, S minus that, so on. So these are the poles. You expand and get the coefficients, or leave it like that for now. It's up to you. And then you have the filter. If you want, you can normalize the gain to be equal to 1 or let G be some factor. So that is the complete design in the analog domain. You now have the transfer function and you have a filter. How do you move to the digital domain? How do you get a digital or discrete time filter? You need to somehow convert from S to Z. And the most common transformation that is used is known as the bilinear transformation, where S is replaced by 2 over T, where T is the sampling interval, or 1 over T is FS, the sampling frequency, times 1 minus Z to the minus 1 plus 1 plus Z to the minus 1. So this is the bilinear transformation. So wherever you have S in the previous expression here, you put 1 over 2t, 1 minus z to the minus 1 divided by 1 plus z to the minus 1, and work your way through and reduce it to a simple ratio of two polynomials in z to the power of minus 1. So in doing this, the Butterworth circle in the S-plane maps to a circle in the z-plane with real axis intercepts at these positions. So that circle moves to a different position in the Z domain, and these poles that are on the left-hand side of the S-plane will go inside the unit circle in the Z domain, and these poles that are on the right-hand side of the S-plane will go outside the unit circle in the Z domain, which of course we don't use. So to give you a picture of what happens, unfortunately, I don't have color, otherwise I could have used color. So they never meet when I do this. That's a circle. This is the Z plane now. That is the S plane. This is the unit circle. The unit circle is the j omega axis. The bilinear transformation maps the frequency from 0 to somewhere you have omega s equal to 2 pi fs. And that will be mapped here from 0 to the corresponding frequency, which we'll call omega s. So this will be the imaginary or vertical axis in the S-plane. So this will come here onto the unit circle. And the left-hand side of the S-plane will come inside the unit circle, and the right-hand side will be outside the unit circle in the Z-domain. So these poles will come somewhere here. There are three poles, and they will be along a circle. They are supposed to be on that circle. That will be the Butterworth circle. So if you choose only the poles that are on the left-hand side of the Laplace domain for stability, those poles will come inside the unit circle in the Z domain. The frequency axis 0 to omega s is mapped from z equal to 1 all the way around back to z equal to 1, or half the sampling frequency is here. Or you can go half the sampling frequency to minus half the sampling frequency and then go around the other way. Okay? We are not going through the design of the bilinear transformation, but these are the properties of the bilinear transformation and the relationship between the Laplace domain and the Z domain that you need to recognize and be familiar with. Have you seen this somewhere in some other course? Yeah, I see some of you nodding, so you must have seen this somewhere. So we need to recognize that, and the fact that now we have poles of h square s in the Laplace domain that are on a circle that is known as the Butterworth circle. So to design that filter, all you need is the radius, which is omega c in the analog frequency, and the order n, and you put the poles there around that circle, observing the basic rule, no pole on this axis because it's then unstable. And the poles must be uniformly distributed around the circle and must be symmetric this way and that way. So you can do it graphically, get the coordinates, and get the transfer function Hs by selecting these. And then apply the bilinear transformation and you come here. If you want, you can get the poles in the Z domain. But otherwise, you simply get the transfer function Hz by substituting S equal to this expression. So poles at S equal to SP and Z equal to, or S equal to SP and S equal to minus SP in the S plane map to Z equal to ZP and Z equal to 1 over ZP. So if one of these is less than 1 in magnitude, the inverse of that will be there outside, which you don't use. So poles in the Z plane are not uniformly spaced around the transform Butterworth circle. They are non-uniformly distributed, and for stability, all the poles of Hz must be within the unit circle in the Z plane. So those are the basic factors to remember. The unit circle in the Z plane is Z equal to e to the j omega, and for points on the unit circle, we have S equal to sigma plus j omega in the Laplace domain, and that equal to the bilinear transformation 2 over t 1 minus z to the minus 1, which is e to the minus j omega, divided by 1 plus z to the minus 1, which is e to the minus j omega. That is 2j over t tan omega over 2. So the S domain is related to the frequency in the analog domain is related to the frequency in the digital domain via a nonlinear transformation. Here, capital omega is the frequency in the Laplace domain, analog frequency. And this omega is the equivalent digital domain frequency. And they are not directly equal because there is this nonlinear transformation. So if you just take the imaginary part, omega is 2 over t tan omega over 2. So this nonlinear relationship must be taken into account. On the unit circle, sigma equal to 0, because we are only dealing with the frequency axis here. The unit circle is this axis. So you get omega equal to 2 over t tan omega over 2, or the small omega is 2 tan inverse capital omega over 2, the analog to digital frequency. So what this says is, if you want a cutoff frequency specified in the discrete time domain as, let us say, 100 hertz, then the omega in the analog domain is not 100 hertz, it is something else. So you need to pre-correct or pre-warp the frequency and get a different analog frequency. Do that design with a different cutoff frequency, and upon bilinear transformation, you will get the frequency you want. Otherwise, if you start with 100 hertz here, your digital filter will have a different cutoff. Because to specify the Butterworth filter, you need to specify omega c, the cutoff, which is the half power point or minus 3 dB point. Okay? So there is a nonlinear relationship that warps the frequency values. When 0 to omega s is mapped here, it is not a linear mapping. It is a nonlinear mapping. The imaginary or vertical axis in the s-plane to the unit circle in the z-domain is a nonlinear mapping of frequencies. So you map HAS by substituting s equal to this expression, which is the bilinear transformation. You get some function of z. You should simplify it to this form. You get this 1 plus z to the minus 1 to the power of n because of this. The Butterworth filter has only poles, but because of this factor, you get 1 plus z to the power of minus 1 to the power of n. So now you get n zeros at z equal to minus 1 in the digital domain or discrete time domain here. And there are n poles. There is an nth order polynomial in z to the power of minus 1 in the denominator, so there are n poles. So you want the denominator in the form of these coefficients that are traditionally called the AK coefficients. The numerator coefficients are called BK. So the moving average filter coefficients that we saw earlier and called them BK are, that's the name that is used in digital filter literature by convention. The denominator is A, the numerator is B. You need to change the gain. If you want unit gain at DC, then you compute the gain of this filter without the factor and then divide by that factor so that the gain at DC is equal to 1, if that's what you want. Or you can put whatever else, whatever other gain you want, and normalize that. This is an infinite impulse response. There are zeros and also poles. In general, the filter looks like this. There is an error in the book. It says 2n minus 1. It should be 2n plus 1. That's in the corrections I have given. You have the B coefficients in the forward path, which is the moving average filter. From xn, you have the delayed versions, xn minus 1, xn minus 2, so on, xn minus n. And they get multiplied by the corresponding factors, the B coefficients, and get added. And then the output, there is a feedback. yn, yn minus 1, yn minus 2, multiplied by a1, a2, so on. And by convention, these are written with a negative symbol or negative sign, and then that's the output. As I said earlier, you can take this portion and put it here, and then you will see two paths of the delays in parallel, and of course then you can remove one path because there is nothing happening in between, and you can get an equivalent realization using only one set of delay operators. And then the feedback path is here, the A coefficients are here, and the B coefficients go this way, but the two are equivalent. Now you only have n delay elements. Okay? The equivalent response in a difference equation is yn equal to the moving average part, bk xn minus k, summed over k going 0 to n. This is the moving average part that we have seen earlier. Now, there is the second part, which is due to the poles, minus ak, and that is just by convention. If you put plus, then these coefficients will be reversed in sign, ak yn minus k. So this is the feedback path, or what is called the autoregressive part. Because the output is fed back, the filter is regressing on its output. So you have the past output samples multiplied with the corresponding coefficients ak, and the output is a combination of the current input, k equal to 0, the current input sample and n past samples of the input minus a combination of n past output samples. Of course, k equal to 0 doesn't apply because that is here. So now the output is a combination of past, the current input and past input samples and a certain number of past output samples. The coefficients bk are given by the factor that we saw earlier, which is due to this factor 1 plus z to the power of minus 1. That comes from the bilinear transformation.